Today's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We're back. Judy, you're back.
I'm back, y'all.
I thought you'd be speaking with some sort of brogue by now,
I lost my brogue in Savannah, Georgia. I had it for a week and a half, and then it went. Then I went to the South, stuffed myself with biscuits and racism and transphobia and homophobia.
Really? That bad, huh?
It's beautiful. It's pretty on the outside.
You've been to Ireland. We've been back since you've been to Ireland on your Rumspringa.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep track of you.
Well, it won't be so hard in the coming year and a half because I don't see myself going anywhere.
Oh, really?
Nowhere.
You're breaking my heart.
No, I don't know.
You're breaking my heart. Last week I was saying you're out on assignment and, you know, like I always say, because thinking about the completely irrelevant show 60 Minutes. And I always figured when they said Mike Wallace was like out on assignment, I just figured he was like too fucked up to make it to work that day.
Well, I was in Georgia for a wedding in Savannah, and it really is beautiful. And we were totally charmed by the South until we took this ghost tour in a hearse that was, it looked really cool, except our driver, Pegleg Ronnie, he's like, yeah, I'm Pegleg Ronnie. Oh, my. His thing was saying, oh, my, over and over again. And he had this accent that was like Baltimore mixed with the South. It was the least attractive accent ever. And
and this is from someone who's from Newark saying that.
Well, you know, Philadelphia has the worst accent. I know they just had that worst accent contest, but it took place in, you know, Scranton, I think, won, which is pretty close. But yeah, he like called Lady Chablis, a major figure in Midnight in the Garden of Evil, that story.
Right?
He called her a she-him. One of the bridesmaids was walking down the street, had the nerve to walk down the street with her girlfriend, caught shit for that, in a town that's like an art college town.
So, you know? I mean, ever since seeing Lady Chablis in the Midnight in the Garden, I've always wanted to go there.
It's beautiful.
I mean, it looks like, you know, this beautiful antebellum paradise.
Yeah, and very spooky, which is very cool. And the food is fantastic, but you know, I started like, oh, let me look at real estate down here. And then it's just like, you just start noticing things that you take for granted in New York.
Like tolerance?
Little things like that. Like
accepting your non-straight, non-white human beings?
Yeah. Yeah, so there'll be no Southern living.
So I like the, I'm sure you're right there in the melting pot of New York, Jackson Heights. I was reading some awful, what are those New York Times, was it the diary stories? But the one was like, my daughter was moving to Astoria, you know?
Terrifying!
I was terrified, she was moving to Astoria. But then I met the Iranian hardware store guy, and he turned out to be lovely, so.
A brown person wasn't a killer.
Unbelievable.
It's yeah, there's another parade there today. We have Jackson Heights has more parades. We moved there in the end of July, and we've already had four parades that I know of, and then there's another one on
that you
Halloween,
know of.
That I know of. I'm sure I missed a few getting up late, but yeah, it was pretty, you know, it was a crazy parade today. I like that aspect of Jackson Heights.
A lot
but
of
anyway,
parades.
We have to introduce our oldie parade, New York
the parade district.
Show.
We're back with another episode of Dude, Where's My New York? Today starring our new friend, the author and storyteller, Tom Pryor.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi, Judy.
That's,
hey, Mike.
Thomas R. Pryor, for those of you looking for him on Amazon and whatnot, to buy his new book, I Hate the Dallas Cowboys.
I Hate the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, fuck the Dallas Cowboys.
Tales of a Scrappy New York Boyhood. And I want to give Judy a copy.
Thank
so you can
very
get Mike
much.
His back.
Okay.
And, as promised.
Oh, and your other book here.
And
River,
the other book.
River to River, New York Scenes from a Bicycle. And this looks a lot like Yorkville, actually. This looks like the East River.
That's looking down towards the Battery from about Christopher Street.
Oh, okay, so because I saw the river on my right, so I assumed it was the East River, and knowing that you are a denizen of Yorkville.
No, unfortunately, the East River bikeway is nothing like the West Side bikeway. The West Side is blessed.
Yeah, that's really
Washington
beautiful.
Bridge to Battery without a car.
It is amazing. The promenade there is pretty.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Pretty amazing. You're in Yorkville. You're in the Upper East Side, which has got kind of a reputation for being kind of a schmancy, yuppie neighborhood. But in your book, it's really tales of, time forgotten. I mean, a neighborhood of immigrants and kids kicking the shit out of each other.
Absolutely. It was walk-ups. I did not ride an elevator except at Macy's until I was 9 years old, and they built a building around the corner from where I lived, and all of a sudden I had friends who were in elevated buildings, and there was a bunch of them, and that's how we ended up playing indoor tackle, because they were latchkey kids. Both parents went to work,
right.
And we would move all the furniture out of the living room and put it into the bedrooms, and then we would play tackle football.
I loved your book. It resonated very much with me. We did the same thing, clear out the furniture. We played hockey. People got hurt. I mean, kids got hurt a lot in those days.
And
playing Ring Alivio and all these crazy games and Buck-Buck.
The Buck-Buck, Johnny on the Pony is the greatest game ever. And I would say 10, 11 of my friends are seeing back specialists now in their late 50s.
Because
early
of something
60s.
That happened to them when they were 9.
Yeah.
But no, and parents didn't sue now. Like now, if your kid went over to someone's house and they conked themselves on a corner, like the parents could sue. Everyone's suing people. But
it's better. It was so much better because everything was settled quickly. Mm-hmm. These two guys in 85th Street between York and East End beat me up. And I went around the corner and my grandmother. And my two aunts saw me. My two aunts with my mother went around the corner and beat the shit out of three kids and told them, go home, tell your mother that we beat the shit out of you. And if she has a problem with it, we're at 1616 York Avenue.
Yeah. Vigilante justice. This is how the West was won.
I remember there was like no better words in school than her mother works. Because then it's like magic at their house.
Oh, yeah, you got it to 5:30, quarter to 6.
Mm-hmm. just thinking about all that, just like reading these stories with these helicopter parents and things that go wrong. But I love, if you were coughing, you would immediately be assumed that you had like whooping cough or were going to die. And the same with my house, too. It's like if I sneezed, it was like wrapped me up, in like bundles of sweaters. It was raining out. I had slickers on. But in the meanwhile, everyone was like smoking at me. I didn't see a seatbelt until I was like 23 years old. And I went around riding my bike with hitting people with baseball bats because that was a game we invented. That was okay.
Same thing.
One sniffle, though.
cumulus clouds of Kent and Marlboro. Uh-huh. And if I coughed, by the end of my second cough, I would smell Vicks Vapor Rub coming at me with two of his sweatshirts.
Your moms were much nicer than mine.
That was my father.
I had to be like vomiting blood to get a day off of school. My mother's we have five kids. It was just like, yeah, screw you. You're still going to school.
Now, I went to school, but it was school and vapor rubbed up and with the sweaters. And I mean, it could be a hurricane outside. It's like, well, you had a yellow rain slicker, so you'll be okay. I remember a lot of really miserable mornings with like boots and slickers and whatever. But meanwhile, they're driving the car and smoking at me with this metal dashboard, pointed sharp metal dashboard and completely irresponsible and otherwise no supervision.
Absolutely. We used to go to the movies, and if you were bad, they would put you in the smoking section. That was before they threw you out. You had to do two bad things to get thrown out of Lowy's or the RKO. But the first thing, the matron or the mate, there would be a guy, or it was usually a matron, grab you, pull you over to the smoking section like it was a Ranger game and you were going in a penalty box, tell you you're going to sit there for 10 minutes, and if you make a word, you're going out. Right? So we did that all the time. And do you mind if I mention my publisher and my editor before I forget?
Please,
because I'm not going to forget, but we might in a short time. YBK Publishers graciously solicited not only River to River, New York Scenes from a Bicycle, my first book, but they ran after me for I Hate the Dallas Cowboys, Tales of a Scrappy New York Boyhood. And YBK Publishers is a small shop on Crosby Street that has some great books. And then my editor is Frank Flaherty. And I would not have a book without Frank Flaherty. Frank Flaherty was the city section and the home section deputy. And he ran day to day at the Times for the Sunday Times. And Frank grew up, he didn't grow up. He went to high school in my neighborhood. We're the same age. So he dove right in. And for a year, we were on the stoop together. And it was the most rewarding collaboration I've ever had in my life since I made bacon with my mother.
That's so nice to have an editor who edits and makes you like a better writer. That's such a, it's so rare now that a book editor edits.
My publisher was in awe of how much work Frank put in to make my book readable. I barely talk English well.
I don't think that's true at all.
I write because I can't communicate otherwise.
Well, hardly, Tom. You're a noted storyteller. Do you want a long-running successful storytelling series?
Yes, I have. It's called Stoops to Nuts. It's City Story Stoops to Nuts. And it's the second Tuesday of every month at Cornelia Street Cafe. And I started telling stories down there in 07. And they asked me to do a monthly show about four and a half years ago. And I love it. I love it because I merge music. And a lot of people from Loser's Lounge come in the narrative, Amanda Thorpe, Leanne Smith, people like that. Joe McGinty came recently with Andrea Diaz. They come and they do their original work. And it always ties in with the storytellers because the storytellers want to be musicians and musicians want to be writers. And it's always a nice love fest. But I enjoy it.
And that place has been around for a really long time. There's
1977.
Yeah, I'm surprised they're still there. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Got great food.
When you were growing up up in Yorkville, did you make it down to the Village a lot?
High school on 2nd and 2nd, LaSalle Academy.
Yeah, Denison of the Fillmore and the Academy of Music and those sort of homes.
I saw Sly and the Family Stone at the Electric Circus on St. Mark's when I was 14. I mean, it really is like the highlight of my concert-going experience. Now I go see John Hyatt, and I get as excited, but I don't get excited like a 14-year-old. I get excited like a 60-year-old, and that level of excitement impacts you the same way, but it's so different.
Yeah.
I have an extra beer now.
An extra beer. There's a lot of beer in your book, by the way. This is a good segue. Because I grew up, I remember we were talking, you were talking like getting your knuckles wrapped, basically getting slugged by a nun for singing a beer jingle.
Oh, I was, it started as a hum, and I was in the back of the class, and I was just like in Yankee land, and it was just baseball and Ballantyne, all across the nation. What a sensation, baseball and Ballantyne.
Hey, Liz, do you have the Schaefer jingle queued up? We got Louis Armstrong doing the Schaefer jingle. One beer to have when you have it. A tagline, by the way, that would not last 10 fucking seconds in today's market.
Great rendition.
The most rewarding flavor in this man's world.
Yeah, he could sing a dictionary.
Yeah.
Richard Burton could read it. It'd be good.
No, I'm ready for some Schaefer after hearing that. We were talking before, too, but when Jimmy Breslin was the spokesperson, one of the great New Yorkers for Peels.
Absolutely.
Who followed Bob and Ray.
Yes, he did. Then he ran for mayor.
He ran for mayor with Norman Mailer. That was.
And then he didn't get shot by anybody downtown after he wrote The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight. I thought that guaranteed at least one hit try on him.
I met Jimmy Breslin when I was covering one of Al Goldstein's harassment trials, and Jimmy Breslin was there covering as well, and I was just gaga because I've learned so much from reading his column over the years. I mean, he's the great New York reporter of all time. This guy could fall out of bed and find a story. And I was just so in awe of him. And I actually got to see him on a payphone. This is in a Brooklyn courthouse building. He actually, you know, this is not that long ago. I mean, everybody else has cell phones, of course. But Jimmy puts a quarter of the payphone, dials the number, and presumably, you know, he got the Daily News on the other end. He goes, copy. And he called in the story. It was like so front page. It was like,
that was great.
I mean, I had goosebumps. It was like, you know, it was like sitting there watching like Jimmy Page put down a guitar solo for, you know, for Scoop Edison over here. I was just in awe. And he was really super nice to me as well when I talked to him. And I was kind of obviously turning to a fanboy. Oh, Mr. Breslin, you know, just a super nice guy. The last of a dying breed, certainly.
I absolutely agree. Him and Pete Hamill. And with Jimmy Breslin, his son Patrick worked for me for 4 years in housing, and he looked just like him. And it was always a weird experience. He's a very nice guy, Pat. And through Pat, I also know that Ronnie Eldridge is married to Pat, right, because my grandmother was an elected official, mm-hmm, and him, my grandmother and Ronnie were friends because they were on county committee together for New York County. So it's very incestuous, and it's always nice because Breslin was not a weepy writer. I love that he was writing good, honest stories 50 years ago. You know, when there was an emphasis to sentimentalize everything, and they were raw, and it always felt like you were a fly on the wall when you read a story of his.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. And I remember, especially, just speaking about Jimmy Breslin, when the whole Bernie Goetz thing went down, his story was the one. I made copies of it and I gave it to people because they just didn't understand what had really happened. His story was called "Hey, I Got $5 for You," but he really trailed it how the story went from, you know, how Bernard Goetz became a hero, a guy riding around, you know, on the subways with a gun in his pocket, and he was somehow, you know, a hero of the story, and the kids were these thugs carrying weapons, and it just wasn't the case. Right. You know, it was just so awful. And he was, like, to me, like the one voice of sanity in that whole fucking mess.
Yeah. He did Son of Sam, too.
Yeah, I mean, well, he got the letters from Son of Sam, which, you know, and he wrote the book about it, 44, which is slightly fictionalized, but pretty, pretty compelling as well. I mean, he's quite a writer. I mean, he wrote all that great, it was fiction, but his last book, Jimmy Breslin's book, I believe the exact title is "I Want to Thank My Brain for Remembering Me." You know, he had an operable brain tumor, and it was horrifying. I couldn't get through the whole thing. It was so deeply personal and scary and so far away from what you expect from Jimmy Breslin, this hard drinking, you know, reporter, you know, really on the beat, the last of the old school kind of reporters, and it was just terrifying that his brain went south. Yeah. And he came back from it, you know?
He did. I think he still carries his swimming trunks around with him and swims every day, because Patrick said he was still swimming.
The old school. I don't even know who's left. I love the story in your book. I mean, you talked about some of the old Yankees, Mickey Mantle and Sparky Lyle, and that was my era, but I love the story. I mean, I've had a bad divorce with the Yankees recently. I can't watch them anymore. I fell out.
Me
with
too.
Them. I mean, it's the Steinbrenner era, the corporate sports, like corporate rock, just fucking sucks. I will never go to that new stadium, and I've said it far too many times in public ever to rescind that. I'm not even on the Yogi Berra plan, 14 years, and like, okay. No, I'm never going to set foot in the new Yankee Stadium. But I love your story about going to the old Yankee Stadium and hiding out in the bathroom until everyone was gone, so after they locked up, you could run the bases.
Oh, absolutely. We used to hide in the bottom of the grandstand, field level, in the bathroom before any movie ever had someone standing on a toilet bowl. And this one guy, there was only one guy security. His name was the Major, same as Ralph Houck's nickname. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have a peg leg, but he should have, the way he walked. And he would go around the grandstand, go around the mezzanine, go around, and that was the last bathroom. So we knew if he came in and didn't see us, we had the place to ourselves. We used to go into the visiting dugout and walk the players from the locker room to the bus running in left field bullpen. And we'd get autographs, and then we'd run back, and we'd run back. And the only son of a bitch in the entire American League who wouldn't sign an autograph for me was Carl Yastrzemski.
Fucking yes.
And I still have hard on for the guy. I mean, I really want somebody take away his records or something. Shit. Lose his MVP. And he says to me, he goes, "Kid, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? What's it worth to you?" And the idiot didn't see it coming. This guy could go out now for 5 days, earn an annual income, and come back. And we went around all of the monuments. And we touched Babe Ruth. And we touched Lou Gehrig. And we touched the Pope. It was great. I mean, it was so much fun.
Who doesn't sign an autograph for a little kid?
He didn't. He had a butt, a Budweiser, and he was carrying dry cleaning.
Okay, so he didn't have a free hand, so he couldn't sign an autograph for a 10-year-old.
I lied and I told him that I grew up in Montauk because I knew that he was from Southampton and his father was a potato or a strawberry farmer. He goes, "What part of Montauk?" And I was like, I couldn't even see it except on a map. It's at the end. Block Island, you can see it.
I got to say, I lament all these old baseball players. Everybody's talking about Derek Jeter. And yeah, I know the guy can run and hit and catch, and he's like absolutely fantastic. I look at him and I just see like like there's like nothing in his eyes. It's just he's this weird like android of a player, and like I don't think he has any personality. I just wish he had something like I could hang on. You know, it's like
right.
I know he's been wonderful playing shortstop all these years, but I just don't care about him.
Well, isn't he gone now?
Yeah, he just retired.
Oh, fuck the Yankees.
But he's so flat.
He is flat.
I mean, he seems to be a good person, but he's a flat person.
I do like that he gives gift baskets to any woman he sleeps with. I think that's a nice.
I'm waiting for mine.
did you put out?
I think you got to toss a salad. According to Gawker, you got to toss a salad to get the gift basket. And there was a pretty graphic illustration on Gawker stealing a note from mild employer Screw. Of Derek Jeter on all fours, but oh, you missed that, didn't you, Judy? I think I could find it.
That was a highlight down at Los Salas, 71 and 72. We'd go down to the newsstand at Houston and get the new Screw magazine when it came out and put it in our red school bags.
What would your mom do if she caught you doing that?
Oh God, this is a story about that. My grandmother was the wise one.
Uh-huh.
I had like some clubs and Wii's and penthouses and Playboys, and they were all neatly stacked and they were all alphabetized. I did everything right, and I kept them under my underwear drawer. My
alphabetized your pornography.
When she did the laundry, she would move them carefully and put the laundry back on top of them. My mother, on the other hand, she comes up to me. I must have been about 13 years old. She goes, "What are you doing to your blanket?" I go, "What?" She goes, "You're doing something to your blanket, and you got to stop. I can't clean your blanket." And I'm like, "Oh God."
I worked with someone who used to bang on the bathroom door when her 14-year-old boy was. She deemed he was in there for too long.
I'll bet you he can't come anymore because of that.
But maybe he lasts a long time. He either lasts a really long time, or he is like a quick shot, like right out of.
There has to be noise involved with his act.
So wait, did you go to Catholic school?
St. Stephen's of Hungary on 82nd Street.
Oh boy, did he. It's like the stories about the nuns in this book. And
Jewish
boy. No, this is like, for me, I'm always very just like amazed and astounded by the stories of like nuns beating on children.
I was an altar boy. I was in the choir. I was a crossing guard. I was the go-to altar boy for Father Benedict Dudley, who was the chaplain in the New York Giants and close with Wellington Mara and Vince Lombardi from Rose Hill, from Fordham. But the other night, I collaborated with St. Stephen's of Hungary. Their fourth graders came and read their Yorkville memories before
mine.
And it was great. We had about 130 people. There were five kids read their pieces. They were hysterical. One was about Coney Island. The other one was about Jones Beach. And it was just a lot of fun. And it was just a great reception. I didn't get over it. Until I'm not over it. I went to Loser's Lounge and it just kept going, at Joe's Pub, and it was humbling. It was humbling. It really was.
Oh, that's amazing.
I was humbled.
There's this part of me that really wants to get slapped by a nun. I feel like it was just something. It was just something part of my upbringing that I missed somehow.
No, it's like tackle football. You want to see if you can withstand it, But the problem with some of these nuns were they had masters of science, and they used to drop their just like gravity do it and whack you right on the top in the center of your head, and it's the worst place to rub. You can't really rub the top of the center of your head well the way you can other parts of your head.
We didn't get they had stopped hitting kids by the time I got to Catholic school.
You look Irish Catholic, by the way.
McGuire. But my mom, when she went to Catholic school, and I don't know why she sent me after this, they would, hit them. And my mother's family was very poor, so they were always late with her tuition. So they would bring her to the front of the class and tell the entire class how Francis's parents were too cheap to pay for her education. So it's not even like, I think that bothered her more than the getting hit. I know exactly what makes them so
cranky. That's painful.
It's horrible.
Yeah,
and why would you send your kid to Catholic school after that?
I'm still mad at my father for not hitting me and just having that threat of hitting there. I was like, get it over with. Stop it. Please, will you? So, yeah, that's all over. I hate the Dallas Cowboys. And Jamie said I had to say it three times, so I've said it twice.
One more time.
I hate the Dallas Cowboys is the name of my book. And today I'll be hating them actively because at 4:25, we're going to kick their ass. You're going down.
We being the New York Giants.
Of course. I suspend my disbelief.
Most lately of New Jersey.
I suspend my disbelief that they actually care that I root for them. And if I don't root for them, they get very sad.
Well, this is one of the reasons I had to divorce from the New York Yankees, because I realized it was a one-way relationship. I mean, I stuck through them. Like, through the 80s, they barreled into fourth place behind the Brewers. You know, I stuck it out through Buckyball and Stump Ball. And, you know, Billy Ball, I love Billy Martin. To me, it was crazy. It was out of control. I mean, he burnt out. I mean, I know people hated him. I mean, the team hated him. Some pitchers got it, and some pitchers just, you know, actively hated him. But they won, and it was a little crazy. But man, I was reading your book. You became the president of the Sparky Lyle fan club to talk about the old school Bronx Zoo, the classic Bronx Zoo.
Yeah,
Yankees.
In 1972, I was sitting in the last seat out in right field, right next to the bullpen. And a ball player started talking to me. He was bored. It was a wipeout. All my friends went home. I stayed by myself. It was like seventh, eighth inning. And it was Sparky Lyle. And he liked football. I liked football. He was a lefty. He liked being a running back. We liked some music together. And, you know, when we were done talking and he was going into the dugout after the game, I said, I'm going to make you a T-shirt and give it to you tomorrow. So I made him a T-shirt and gave it to him. Then he goes, are you going to come to the game the next day? I go, yeah. And he goes, well, I'm going to wear your T-shirt. So I go to the game, and I don't see him in the bullpen for most of the game, and I'm going nuts. It's against the Texas Rangers, their first year out of Washington as the Senators. So it's June 72. I'm at the game. I can't find Sparky Lyle. And I'm going nuts, and the players say he got married. Another one said he's meeting the Pope. And I said, I didn't know you had so many comedians on the team. And I run back, and it's the eighth inning. Frank Howard's coming up, 6'8". And who comes in? Sparky Lyle. He was probably under the bleachers doing something. So he strikes out three Rangers with the bases loaded on 10 pitches, one foul ball. And he's coming off the mound, and he's hitting his chest with his glove. And then he sees me because I'm going nuts behind him. He opens four buttons, shows me my shirt, and it looks like a gunshot wound because I use flare pen for the stripes. So I get home, and my grandmother says, I saw your shirt on Channel 11. She goes, it looks like he was bleeding. I go, yeah, I use flare pen. She goes, why didn't you use a Bic? So my grandmother knew 19 cents Bic how to make the shirt.
She was a wise woman.
She watched games. She did three or four things simultaneously so well. She was incredible. She was the district leader. She pretty much ran the neighborhood for years. It was when fixing tickets was part of your responsibility as a district leader. You know, getting out of jury duty was part of your responsibility. She always had a lot of alcohol. There was a black cabinet with every type of, and she didn't drink because she wanted to have whatever your favorite drink was when she came up. Once I come up and Cuomo's there when he's running for governor, and he brings along one of his kids. And I'm looking at this guy and I go, he's a wise-ass son of a bitch. Look at him, that little smug. He was about a year or two younger than me. So when they leave, I only learn later that was Andrew. And he hasn't changed.
He's an asshole.
Why does anybody on earth, including his children, like him?
I'm
miserable.
He's a real, real disappointment. And the fact, like, you know, in New York elections,
he's a bully.
He's a horrible person.
And man, a New York State, I mean, corrupt New York State politics is
wasn't
incredible.
Wasn't it great how he pulled it out after putting it in? I mean, here he goes. He's got a committee going, and maybe we're going to clean it up. Hey, Silver's finally going to get a piece of it at 80 years old.
Yeah, not bloody likely.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I just moved to Queens, and I got registered to vote just in time so I can vote Green Party against that motherfucker.
I know.
I don't even care if Rob Estorino wins. He won't, but it makes no difference.
I love this. It's turned into like WOR about 40 years ago, and we're doing politics.
We should do a special.
Oh, Rambling with Gambler.
We should do a special on just like the golden days of Queens Democratic politics.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Manning.
Donald Manning.
Okay. Where was the Donald Manning book?
I don't feel that well today.
Do you remember? I mean,
I think I'm going to stab myself in the kitchen to death.
While I'm talking on the phone, after my failed suicide attempt or faked murder robbery attempt in my car. Boy, those were the days, huh?
Well, there you go about genetic depression. His brother did the same thing in the same manner.
His father
committed suicide.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
We're ending on a dark note.
On the final days of the Koch administration. Well, maybe next week when we come back, I'll tell you about the time I got into a fight with Ed Koch. But it's been the fastest half hour on the internet today.
Where can we find Tom's book?
My book, I Hate the Dallas Cowboys, can be found
Fuck the Dallas Cowboys.
Fuck them. On Amazon and on Barnes & Noble and on Abe Books and pretty much any place on the internet that sells books. And it's reasonably priced, and it's 300 pages, and there's 85 black and white old photographs of old New York and old Yorkville, the neighborhood I still love.
All right, reasonably priced, but unreasonably good. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Recommend it to everyone without qualification. So once again, on Arts and Seizure, for Judy McGuire and Tom and for Liz in the booth, it's Mike Edison. We'll see you guys next week. We're going out with Sinatra and Kelly. What are we hearing?
On the Town.
New York, New York. See you guys next week.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.